When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There is no better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. It's got great odds and markets for the NBA, NHL, college basketball, and so much more. It has got awesome new and existing user promotions. It is unquestionably America's number one sports book. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get your winnings fast. Now winnings are delivered in as quick as 2 hours. It's a fast turnaround. It's fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay. Discover the most popular SGPs each day right when you log in. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started right now. Sign up with promo code BOXING so they know that I sent you. Promo code BOXING so they know Chris Mannix sent you their way.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, we are back. And first order of business is to apologize to all the listeners out there for missing the show last week. I was battling some kind of, I don't know what it was. It wasn't COVID. Took a few tests on that. But it was some kind of stomach virus that caught my throat. And I couldn't talk. So I chose to rest my throat on Thursday and Friday in advance of working for DAZN on Saturday. So I made a executive decision on that front. And that's why the podcast did not post last week. But I saw all your tweets and your direct message on Instagram, your direct message on Twitter. One of you even texted me. I don't know how you got my number. I didn't recognize who the number was, but you were asking where the podcast was. But I appreciate the energy that you guys have for this podcast every week. So we're going to have a good one this week. Errol Spence, who's fighting this weekend, he's going to join me a little bit later on. And right now, good friend of the program, Keith Idek, live from Arlington, Texas, where he'll be attending the Spence versus Ugas fight. What's happening, Keith?
Chris, how you doing, man? Hey, I got to say, I mean, there probably are some people that would argue that it was good that you couldn't talk last week. I don't know.
I think there are plenty.
Decent amount of those people, probably, right?
Oh, at least on social media. They live there. But I was fine for the broadcast. I recovered in time. Yeah. But it was the cost of it was not doing this podcast last week, which kept me from an extra half an hour with Sergio, which is a win in and of itself. All right, I want to jump right in, Keith, and I want to start with some of the more serious news of the week. Earlier this week, the U.S. government announced sanctions against members of the Kinahan Transnational Criminal Organization. That's a group that includes Daniel Kinahan, one of the founding members of boxing management company MTK Global. What the sanctions effectively mean, to kind of boil it down, is that no U.S. business can work with Kinahan. The government also issued a $5 million reward for the arrest and conviction of Daniel Kinahan and others associated with what they call a criminal organization. Now, why am I bringing this up on a boxing podcast? Well, because Kinahan is the co-founder of MTK Global, which is a very influential boxing management company. He has a visible relationship with Tyson Fury, the heavyweight champion of the world. He has been linked to ProBellum, the fledgling promotional outfit, which recently held a two-day event in Dubai where Kinahan is reportedly living. Now, MTK has come out and said Kinahan is no longer involved with their business. ProBellum has come out and said that they will no longer have any association with Kinahan. Top Rank's Bob Arum has come out and said he intends to unwind and undo any relationships they have with fighters involved with MTK, involved with Daniel Kinahan. So this is why we're addressing it right now, because the tentacles of this government investigation reach over into boxing. So Keith, I want to kind of start there. Like, in your mind, and you over at Boxing Scene, Jake Donovan done a great job reporting on this over the last few days. What are the ripple effects into boxing? Like, how significant do you believe these latest developments are for the sport we cover?
Well, pretty significant, Chris, in that before this was kind of something that was festering toward the surface. It was kind of understood and widely accepted that someone who obviously has a suspicious past is involved in boxing in a very influential way. But when the U.S. government issues a press release that says, listen, we're on these guys' asses, I mean, you know, this becomes a whole different deal as it relates to boxing. And I spoke to Bob Arum on Tuesday. You know, I've gotten some feedback, backlash or whatever. Well, what else is he going to say? This is serious business as it relates to Top Rank, because Top Rank has, as you well know, a television output deal with ESPN, which is owned by the Disney Corporation. The Disney Corporation is not going to be in business in any way, shape, or form with someone who's suspected of murdering people, trafficking heroin, et cetera, right? So they have to, I don't think this is a matter of Top Rank just publicly distancing themselves from Daniel Kinahan because they feel like they have to. They are going to have to, whether they like it or not. They've already, ESPN will now, ESPN Plus had been streaming a lot of MTK Global fights from various locales over the last few years. I had been told long before this press release came out that once that deal came to an end at the end of this year, that ESPN was not going to allow Top Rank to continue broadcasting MTK Global fights, or they were all streamed, not really broadcasting, but because of this entanglement, right? So that was going to come to an end anyway, I think. But now, because this press release came out, they're now not streaming this fight, MTK fight card, tomorrow. Now, MTK has tried to distance itself from Daniel Kinahan too. But as you mentioned, Chris, he's the co-founder of the company. He's kind of operating in the shadows and everything. But as it relates to Tyson Fury, he's not really operating in the shadows, because Tyson Fury has publicly acknowledged him numerous times. And as far as helping him negotiate deals and everything, this is the heavyweight champion of the world, or one of them. It's not some, you know, some Irish prospect that's 4-0 or something. This is the heavyweight champion of the world who next week will fight in front of 94,000 people at Wembley Stadium against Dillian White. My question, Chris, is this. Tyson Fury has what could only be described as a contentious relationship with the British Boxing Board of Control. Does the British Boxing Board of Control want to, I don't know, make a power move next week and say, hey, if you don't publicly distance yourself from Daniel Kinahan, we're not licensing you for this fight. Now, I know that he's applied for a license as a U.S. fighter, because he lives at least part-time, and this is true. He lives part-time in Henderson, Nevada. So he's applying as a U.S. fighter. That doesn't mean anything if you're affiliated with because U.S. citizens or U.S. businesses are not supposed to be affiliated with this person in any way. And he publicly is. So if they want to make an issue out of this, they certainly could. I don't know that they will, but they could, you know. So at Top Rank doesn't seem, and maybe this is just wishful thinking on their part, they don't think that it's going to become an issue. So we'll see how that unfolds next week in London.
I wonder too, and everything you said, I agree with. What does ESPN do about this now? I mean, as you said, Tyson Fury hasn't shied away from the closeness of their relationship. When there was a deal that was constructed for Fury to face Anthony Joshua. Tyson Fury came out and in video thanked in part Daniel Kinahan for the work that he did on that deal. So, like, and look, as we record this on Thursday early evening, Tyson Fury has not spoken publicly on that relationship. He had a conference call with some, you know, members of the Roundabout Media, and he wasn't asked about that specific topic on that conference call. I'm sure he will be in the coming days. He's set to fight a week from Saturday. But, I mean, do you anticipate or do you think there might be any kind of ripple effects on ESPN? It's like, if Tyson Fury doesn't disavow this guy, I mean, it's so hard to, like, because Aram's out there saying, and you talk to him, like, we did this deal with Frank Warren. Like, this is a deal between Frank Warren, yeah, Tyson Fury, and me. When, you know, you can probably be sure in some way or the other, Kinahan was involved in that, in some way, shape, or form in that deal.
The only thing I would say, Chris, as it relates to this fight in particular, it was a purse bid, so there really wasn't any negotiating. True. So, you know, he was getting his percentage, you know, it wound up being like a completely lopsided percentage in Tyson Fury's favor, more so than usual. So there wasn't much negotiating required, or any negotiating required, really. He's getting a massive purse. He's got, what is it, $32 million and some odd dollars. Dillian White, what a great deal for him. He gets $8 million to fight and refuses to promote it. What a world, right? But be that as it may, I don't know what's going to happen here with Fury, but if I were him, now he's in a precarious position because I don't know the extent of his dealings with Daniel Kinahan. I mean, he considers him a friend or whatever. I don't look. People have bad judgment in many ways. I don't know what his relationship is with Kinahan. Maybe it's just not as easy as we might think to distance himself from Daniel Kinahan. If Daniel Kinahan, whatever he's really doing here, if he cares about Tyson Fury at all, if he really cares about him, he would just say, "Hey, look, I get it. I got to step away from this." And, you know, and that would be the end of it with him and Josh Taylor and several other prominent fighters mm-hmm. that he advises. But this is Chris. This is they've offered a $5 million reward.
That's a whopper of a fee right there. A whopper of a prize.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but the New York City Police Department offered a much lower reward for someone who shot 29 people in the subway the other day. Mm-hmm. So this is serious business here as it relates to the Kinahan operation. You know, like you said, this was a huge story that sent ripple effects throughout the industry this week.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, and there's only so much information we have right now, but you know, are there going to be ripple effects for ProBellum? Now, ProBellum was very strong in its statement where they said, we're not going to have anything to do with Daniel Kinahan, but they did just do a show in Dubai where Daniel Kinahan is reportedly living. A lot of MTK fighters are a number of MTK fighters are on the ProBellum stable. You've got U.S.-based promoters involved with ProBellum. Richard Schaefer is at the top of it. Lou DiBella just recently aligned about a dozen or so of his fighters with ProBellum. That's something I think that at the very least bears watching to see what happens in the next few weeks as far as ProBellum's whatever comes out about ProBellum's involvement in the past with Daniel Kinahan.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. I mean, it's like you said, it bears watching. But look, if as journalists, we obviously have to be careful about what we say and what we write, because I don't have any proof that he's in. I'm not saying that he's not. I'm just saying I don't know definitively that he is. So, you know, oftentimes where there's smoke, there's fire, of course. But look, I mean, they came out with a strong statement yesterday. They said what they said.
You know, something I've heard from you know, people in boxing the last couple of days, like, well, you know, like boxing, one of the sports where you're involved with bad people all the time. This is the first I've, Keith, this is the first I've seen where a person's so bad that they have a $5 million bounty on them to get
the one thing I would say, Chris, is if you and I were a boxing scribe, so to speak, in the 1940s, and we were wearing fedoras and all this weird stuff, it would have been a very different sport to cover because there was a lot of underworld influence in boxing then. So there were a lot of bad people, murderers and, you know, pretty terrible people involved in boxing behind the scenes and sometimes in the forefront. You wouldn't think that would exist in 2022, but here we are.
All right, Keith, let's move on to some actual boxing. And let's start last weekend in Texas, where I was. Ryan Garcia, he makes his return from a 15-month layoff. Ryan, one of the most popular fighters in boxing. He comes back. He's got a new trainer with Joe Goosen. He takes on Emmanuel Tego in a fight that wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing fight. Tego really came to survive more than anything else. And you know, didn't bring much to the table offensively. Ryan, I thought his timing looked a little bit off, looked a little bit sluggish. Yeah. Maybe he's adjusting to some new things with Joe Goosen. Give me your kind of impressions of what you saw from Ryan Garcia.
Yeah, you know, he had been off for 15 months, Chris, and he's with a new trainer. And they always say, the old adage in boxing is, your first fight with a new trainer, you're not going to show what you're capable of with that trainer until the second fight, the third fight, the fourth fight. I mean, so I wasn't all that surprised that he wasn't. I was surprised that he did not knock Emmanuel Tego out. I did expect that to happen. And it looked in the second round anyway that it was going to happen. I think later, maybe it was the 10th round that he hurt him again. You know, so it looked like he would get him out of there at some point. But as you said, Tego did a good job trying to survive. For him, getting through 12 rounds was a victory of sorts, right? I mean,
I'll say this though, Keith, he talked so much shit during fight week. Like, yeah, he was talking a lot of shit.
But Chris, you and I have been down this road many times. Guys say all kinds of crazy things during fight weeks, and they're trying to hype the fight. I get it. I mean,
it was funny though, Keith. Like sitting in the fighter meeting with Tego, where he's like, Ryan doesn't have real power, and you look to his right, and there's like Peter Kahn, his manager, kind of going like shaking his head. Then you see his trainer next to him, kind of shaking his head, doing the same thing. Like everybody knew Ryan had real power, and I think in that first round, once Tego got a taste of it, I think that changed everything in his mind.
Yeah, and. Look, he's a much shorter guy. You know, maybe could fight at junior lightweight if he squeezed down a little bit. But again, he was just the guy who Garcia had to get back into the ring with, shake off some of that ring rust, and start getting toward quote unquote real fights. You know, so you know he won. Getting rounds in was not necessarily a bad thing for him. He had been out of the ring so long. I don't think that was a bad thing. So you know, he gets back into camp with Joe. And they can see what they can do together in the second fight. I know what I want that second fight to be. And I know that that's not going to happen necessarily because they're going to try to keep him busier than fighting twice or three times a year. But I hope we're not in a situation where he's fighting every 2 or 3 months against fighters on Emmanuel Tego's level, because I don't think that's particularly helpful for him. And I also don't think that, you know, he's one of Golden Boy's few assets that they have left on their roster. And I think if they, you know, they really want to start maximizing his earning potential, you're going to have to fight somebody.
So when you say, you know, who you'd like to see him fight next, you're talking about Tank Davis, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wrote a column last week that you know, if Tank wins against Rolly Romero and he's heavily favored to win, if Ryan Garcia beats Emmanuel Tego, again, he was heavily favored to win. The fight was much closer to happening last year than, I know you're well aware of this, but than a lot of people realize. They were pretty far, you know, they negotiated. They both wanted the fight. Both sides seemingly wanted the fight. Then the Pacquiao thing came up. Garcia's people got a little distracted with that, and I get it. I mean, he's, you know, if you think there's real potential to, at that point, fight Manny Pacquiao and wherever it was going to happen, and there's a lot of money, there was a big pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. I don't blame them for chasing it. I just didn't think it was real from the beginning. Cause Chris, how many times have we gone down this road with, you know, in private investors into it? Now it's happened a few times, you know, Eddie Hearn brought heavyweight title fight to Saudi Arabia and all that. But most times those things don't materialize. And I've kind of figured that would be the case with Pacquiao and Garcia. And that did turn out to be the case. And by the time they knew that the Pacquiao fight wasn't real, meaning Garcia's people, well, Tank had moved on to moving up to 140 pounds and he signed a contract to fight Mario Barrios. So the fight just kind of went away. And then obviously Ryan was having his issues outside of the ring that he had to deal with. And Tank went and fought. Well, he wound up fighting Isak Cruz. He was trying to fight Rolly Romero, who is, for whatever it's worth, the mandatory challenger for his secondary WBA title.
Yeah, I walked away from that fight with Garcia thinking I'd like to see him in one more against a fighter that's not Tank Davis, not a nobody. Like Jojo Diaz was ringside for that fight. I wouldn't mind seeing Garcia against Jojo Diaz in a way, not to dismiss Jojo's chances of winning, but Jojo's kind of, he emulates kind of the physical stature of a a Gervonta Davis. Kind of, they're about the same size. And JoJo's tough. You know, he's hard headed and he'll take a punch.
I see where you're coming from with that, Chris, but I would not do that if I were them because I think that's too risky. If look, JoJo Diaz is no stay busy fight, right?
No.
I mean, yeah, he obviously lost to Devin Haney and he's probably better suited as a junior lightweight than he is at lightweight. But JoJo Diaz can fight. And I wouldn't, if I were them and the end game was to get to Gervonta Davis sometime later this year, I would not put him in the ring with JoJo Diaz. But
that's fair. That's
I'm
fair.
I'm not saying that they won't because they have JoJo Diaz. It's an easier fight to make. You know, JoJo's looking for coming off the loss to Haney. JoJo's looking for a real fight and a decent payday. So I'm not saying that it won't happen. I'm just saying from a matchmaking standpoint, I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I can see that. JoJo's dangerous. He's on that kind of second tier of guys at 135 and very much capable of winning, especially since he's really hard to knock out. Like he's very hard-headed and he's going to come through a lot of your power. JoJo's trying to come back, too. He's trying to come back in the summertime against John O'Carroll in a fight. We'll see if that happens. But, yeah, either way, I'd like to see Ryan get back, maybe in, like, July. Like, they seem to be ready to turn him around quickly. If you get him back in July and he comes through that fight unscathed, you know, maybe you can get into the fall and make a fight with Tank Davis. On that note, like, you know, we see what's happening with Tank Davis, at least from a social media level, where Tank keeps tweeting stuff and then deleting him. Not like he doesn't really understand their screenshots are a thing. And that these things are immortalized forever. I mean, how do you look at the fight between Tank and Ryan to being makeable at this point? I know that they had these discussions with what's going on with Tank right now. Does that make it more makeable, less makeable? How do you see negotiations for a fight like that potentially going?
One thing I would say as it relates to Tank Davis tweeting these things, he knows what he's doing. He's tweeting these things and then he's getting some heat from the appropriate people to take it down and he's acquiescing and taking it down. But he's
after
getting
everybody screenshot it. After,
right. He's getting his message out there. The guy, he's not a dumb kid. He knows what he's doing as it relates to that. I found when he first started tweeting about Floyd and the possibility, not the possibility, the distinct possibility that he would leave Mayweather Promotions after this fight, I said, well, that's interesting. But I found it more interesting that someone asked him if they were doing an all access for this Rolly Romero fight, which they are, by the way, they do it for all their pay-per-view fights. I don't know why the person was asking him that 7 weeks out from the fight, but he was. And Tank said, I don't know what he said something like, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know what they're doing, but I'll be out of all of their hair before too long. Now, was he talking about Mayweather, Al Haymon, Showtime? That's who I would consider all of them. But as it relates to your question though, Chris, if he leaves Mayweather Promotions, which it certainly seems like he is going to do after this Rolly Romero fight, he could stay with Al Haymon and still be affiliated with PBC and still fight on Showtime pay-per-view, or even if they wanted to put him in a showcase fight on Showtime, the network itself, he could still do that. But he may be trying to give himself the flexibility to make these fights that he wants and let whomever is willing to come in with the most money bid for those fights. That could happen. I mean, DAZN obviously has tightened the purse strings and, you know, and has lost a couple of fighters or fights because of that. But maybe they say, hey, we can make Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia. We'll pay whatever it takes to make that fight.
Especially Keith, especially like Eddie Hearn right now has a U.S. roster that is what, zero? I don't know what Matchroom Boxing USA is at the moment. Devin Haney is gone. Demetrius Andrade is gone. A handful of guys sprinkled there. The point is, you would think he's got to have some budget for something. And, you know, everybody's kind of focused on, will Golden Boy sign Gervonta? Well, Eddie could sign him, and you could still make the Ryan Garcia fight. In fact, it might be just as easy to make the fight if that was the case, if Eddie is involved and DAZN is ultimately involved. I think it's wherever Gervonta goes, I think it's smart to open up his options, to keep that box as open, as wide as it can be, because I'm sure he's making good money and has for the last few years, but he keeps fighting nobody. He keeps fighting guys you're not interested in. And after Rolly Romero, I don't know what the next option is on that proverbial side of the street. I don't know who the attractive fight is for him there. Whereas if it's, you know, wherever it is, at 135, 140, you've got options with other promoters and other people being involved. So Gervonta is going to be 28 years old this year. Now's the time. Like, he has got to find his way into a big fight.
And I think that's the way he's looking at it too, Chris. I think he's grown frustrated. He is making very good money. And I would disagree slightly in the, and I know what you mean, that people are not interested in the fights, but he has become the type of fighter where his fights are events.
Yeah.
Among his fans,
you know, the
people
who
love
it, yeah.
The people who love Gervonta Davis, they don't really care whether he's fighting Ricardo Nunez or Isak Cruz or Rolly. The Romero fight's going to get a lot of interest because Rolly Romero talks a lot of smack and, you know, they have this rivalry and all that. But, you know, some of the other guys that he has fought, they don't really care. They're showing up regardless because they want to see Tank Davis knock someone out. And it's a big event. I've been at a lot of these fights. The crowds are huge. And so you have to give them credit for kind of, you know, cultivating this fan base with him and making him at least happy with the amount of money he's been making in these fights. But Gervonta Davis is a fighter at heart. He comes from the worst part of Baltimore. He certainly didn't have it easy growing up with his family dynamic. You know, is a testament to his fortitude that he's made it to this point. And there have been some missteps along the way, but he's gotten in some trouble and everything, but he's maturing. I think, he's stayed out of trouble for, you know, some semblance of time here at least, but I think because he's a fighter at heart and he's got that dog in him, he hates hearing from you, from me, from trolls on Twitter, whomever. He hates hearing that Gervonta Davis won't fight Devin Haney. Gervonta Davis won't fight Ryan Garcia. Gervonta Davis won't fight Teofimo Lopez. He won't fight Lomachenko. He doesn't want the quote unquote smoke. And he hates hearing that. And he knows that he's going to be 28 years old soon. And I think the way it's been explained to me is he has grown very frustrated with not being allowed to take the types of fights that he now wants, or maybe wanted all along, because again, most of these fighters, whether it's Gervonta Davis or Devin Haney or Jojo Diaz, you know, pick a guy. Most of them want tough fights because they're fighter. I mean, some of them maybe to a lesser degree, but most of them, well, they're not. I hate when people like say people who fight for a living are not afraid.
No,
I mean,
no, you know, fighters are afraid.
Some might be more reserved from a matchmaking standpoint and less willing to take risks at certain times than others. That's certainly true. But calling guys afraid who walk up those steps for a living and quite literally risk their lives is kind of, not kind of, it's stupid.
It is.
You know? So
the only guy I've ever seen afraid was that guy that walked out of the ring when F.A. Ajagba.
Well, he was afraid. He was afraid.
he was
and not terribly bright either, because you're not going to get paid that way. So I don't know what he was thinking exactly, but yeah.
Just falling down, like take one shot. And
what was his name? Curtis something?
Oh, God, I forgot
his name.
I just struck me as the one guy, because I agree with you 100%. Fighters aren't afraid. Like sometimes they get a little bit, they wind up with these warped perceptions of reality,
right,
and get talked into stuff. But yeah,
and it's and ultimately it's a business. You know, you want to be paid appropriately.
Correct.
And I get all that, but you know,
but great opportunity now. Like Romero, I think will be a big event because you're right. Romero will talk. There's bad blood. More likely than not, he'll score a spectacular knockout in that fight, and then you can go on before the end of the year, take a fight with Ryan Garcia, which is a huge event in either Southern California or Las Vegas, wherever you can make the most money. And who knows after that. If you win that fight, you go into next year, maybe you can fight for the undisputed title at 135. Like the options are there. They're all on the table for Gervonta Davis. He has to just go and reach for it. All right, I want to ask you about another fight from this past Saturday. Gennady Golovkin, he makes his return from a long layoff himself. He gets a big win, knocks out Ryota Murata. Some shaky moments there for Golovkin. Took some shots to the body that reminded us that he's a little more vulnerable there than he has been before. But he gets the win. He's unified at 160, just the second fighter over the age of 40 to become a unified champion, which is impressive in and of itself, along with Bernard Hopkins. What did you think of Gennady's performance? And more specifically, what did his performance tell you about a potential fight with Canelo?
Well, he oftentimes, even in fights against lesser opponents over the course of the years, Gennady Golovkin has been hit to the head, not as much as he did against Murata, but he's been hit to the head before, and he's always shown a granite chin. So even when he was taking some of those flush punches from Murata, who's a pretty solid puncher, I wasn't worried about him going down or getting knocked out from the headshots. The body shots were what seemed to be affecting him, you know, made him retreat a couple of times, and he was really getting hit a lot in the first 4.5 rounds or so of that fight. And at the time, I was in Las Vegas, but I was covering the fight in my hotel room off of the computer. And I was like, man,
you were up early.
Yeah, it was not pleasant. I say that much. I went to a wedding the night before in Las Vegas, and came home and slept for 3 hours. Not to bore people with my agenda there, but anyway. So, but I did stay up and watch all, you know, the two undercard fights and that fight. And as it was unfolding, I said, "Man, this is turning into a little bit more difficult of a fight than we expected." I expected a little bit of rust from Golovkin because he hadn't fought in 15 months, and he is 40. You know, he turned 40 the day before the fight, so you're kind of expecting him to be, you know, to take a little more time than usual to get into a rhythm. Not 4.5 rounds, but once he started touching Murata in ways that he was not used to being touched, then the complexion of the fight changed. And the power is always the last thing to go. And Gennady Golovkin is a devastating puncher, maybe more a volume puncher than a one punch knockout guy, but he's got very heavy hands. He always has had those. And he came back from some adversity, won the fight by knockout. I like a lot of people, I don't like the prospects of how he will fare in a third fight against Canelo Alvarez. I just think at this point in his career, you know, Canelo won the rematch. I wouldn't say he overwhelmed him or anything, but I thought he won. I didn't think there was any controversy there as opposed to the first fight, which was absurd that it resulted in a draw, I thought. But I thought he convincingly won the second fight, and I think he'll win the third fight even more convincingly. And if there was ever a fight where I would say that even a fighter with a granite chin is at risk of being stopped, I would say that's it probably. It's a huge payday for Gennady Golovkin, but I just think that Canelo Alvarez, while he's got a lot of fights, you know, he's got 60 plus fights of his own, and he's been boxing since he was, you know, as a pro since he was 15 years old or whatever. He's still only 31 years old, much younger than Golovkin. Mm-hmm. Seems to be in the heart of his prime right now. He's fighting at an elite level, you know, arguably the best pound for pound fighter in the world. And I don't see a path to victory for Gennady Golovkin in that third fight, unfortunately for him.
Yeah, the chin is still there. The offensive firepower is still there. The body is not. You know, we saw in that war he fought against Derevyanchenko a couple of years ago, Golovkin got touched the body, and he got hurt to the body. And in the third round of that fight against Murata, he took a big shot to the body that backed him up, made him take a deep breath, made him regroup. You know, Murata, Keith, kind of took a page out of the Golovkin playbook. He took the fight straight to Golovkin in ways that guys weren't doing before Canelo did that in the second fight. He just went at him, took the fight to him, and threw everything he had. He was just limited. He didn't have enough firepower to beat Gennady Golovkin, but he had the right game plan going up against him. Going up against Canelo, like, I can see Golovkin absorbing Canelo's best headshot, but Canelo might be the best body puncher in all of boxing. He is fast, he is strong, and he's going to put a big bullseye on that midsection and hit Golovkin with some shots that I think are going to really hurt him. And as tough as Golovkin is, as unknockoutable as I think he is to the head, you can get stopped to the body. Golovkin should know. He stopped plenty of guys to the body during his run up the ranks at middleweight. I like to think to myself, maybe 8 more pounds for Golovkin after making 160 forever might be beneficial to him at this stage of his career. Canelo coming down in weight after, you know, whatever happens against Dmitry Bivol, maybe that takes something out of him. So I'm searching maybe for paths to victory, but when I look at the shots Golovkin's taken to the body and his response to him, you know, Sergio Mora, he says it right. He says the body never forgets. And, you know, when you get hit that much to the body and you go up against a big body puncher, something's going to give there. And it's probably going to be you.
Yeah, that's a good point, Chris. I mean, he is a vicious body puncher, and he has not taken body shots well. The one thing that you mentioned that I thought was interesting, because it was in the back of my mind, even though the Derevyanchenko fight was a very long time ago now, it was 2.5 years ago, he hadn't been in a real fight since then. He had only fought Kamaru Zaremba, who quite frankly didn't belong in the ring with even a 38-year-old Gennady Golovkin when they fought. That wasn't anything resembling a tough test for Gennady Golovkin. So since the Derevyanchenko fight, which was an absolute, that was one of the best fights that I've seen from ringside for sure. I thought, and I think you might have even thought so too, that it was the fight of the year in 2019. You just didn't know how he was going to fare against a real fighter until last Saturday, right? And give credit to Murata, as you mentioned, Chris. Murata came to fight. He said, "Look, I'm not going to sit back and be careful against the, I'm here in front of my countrymen who've shown me nothing but love over the course of my career. I'm going to go out on my shield and go for broke here. And he did. And he was successful for half of the fight. And then the other half of the fight, he wasn't. But at least he can, you know, take pride in knowing that he really tried to bring the fight to one of the biggest punchers of this generation.
All right. Let's talk about the fight you're at this weekend. Errol Spence against Jordanes Ugas, three pieces of the 147-pound title on the line. Errol Spence returning from yet another serious injury. A couple of years ago, it was a car crash that Spence was coming back from. He beat Danny Garcia in that fight. His next fight out, he was going right back into another big fight against Ugas after having a serious eye injury that forced him to withdraw from a scheduled fight against Manny Pacquiao last summer. Let me ask the question here, Keith. Like, what's the unknown for you in this fight? We've seen Spence come back from the car crash, which was as serious an accident as you can get in physically. He was beat up. His face was beat up after that. Now you've got the eye injury. What are kind of the unknowns for you in this fight?
Well, the unknown, the obvious unknown for all of us is how is he going to respond from retina surgery to his left eye, right? Now, I just spoke to Derek James right after the press conference. I had him off to the side of the stage there. And Derek was very confident in that his eye did not affect him in any way, shape, or form in training camp. Now, if it did, he's obviously not going to tell us. But but Derek James said the same thing when he prepared for Danny Garcia. He said, look, you know, he's a little rusty and all that. And, you know, it's his first training camp since the accident. He said, but I don't see any slippage in him. I think he's going to be fine. And he went out there and he beat Danny Garcia pretty easily. Now, they both kind of admitted today, Errol Spence during the press conference and Derek James after the press conference, that, you know, his body was a little sore in training camp for that first fight. Even though the fight was 13 and a half months after the accident, he had been through some serious trauma from a physical standpoint and going through a rigorous training camp. He didn't feel at his peak physically, whereas now he went through another training camp for the Pacquiao fight because he pulled out of the fight only 11 days in advance. Now he feels physically closer back to what he was before the accident. And he said today that he feels like he's in even, because of some of the things that he's learned about managing his body and all that, he feels like he's an even better fighter than the one that beat Sean Porter. And what was also one of the fights of the year in 2019 was a dogfight for sure. So he says he's going to be better than the guy who fought Sean Porter. And well, he better be, because the guy he's fighting, a lot of people think beat Sean Porter. And that wasn't the Sean Porter that got knocked out by Terrence Crawford. And I don't think he was a diminished version of Sean Porter all that much when he fought Crawford, but he was more in his physical prime and he was a world champion when he fought Jordanes Ugas. A lot of people think Ugas won the fight. Spence and his people are in no way underestimating Ugas. I mean, anyone who would do that at this point, coming off the win over Pacquiao and the fact that he's, you could argue, undefeated as a welterweight since 2016, because his only loss is to Sean Porter. They know they're in for a real fight, but Errol Spence, if he's anything resembling what he was before, and there's no reason to believe that he's not, he should beat Jordanes Ugas. And then maybe, who knows, maybe we'll get the fight we've wanted for the last 3 years, right?
Yeah. Look, I like Spence in this fight too, for a lot of the reasons that you said, from talking to him and from talking to people around him the last couple of months. You know, they talk about how he, you know, after the car accident, there were certain things he couldn't do physically. Like after the eye surgery, he had to rest and recover from that. But while he couldn't spar right away, he was doing stuff. Like he was in the gym, he was working out. It wasn't like he had to take an extended period of time off after that eye surgery. So they believe, and Spence believes, he's going to be sharp going into this fight. From talking to Spence, it doesn't sound like there's a confidence issue when it comes to like wanting to protect that eye a little bit more. No. Like he just seems like he's ready to go, and he's as close to full strength as he's going to be. And if he is, he's just better than Ugas. Not to say Ugas is bad, but I think Spence at the top of his game is better than Ugas at the top of his game. He's going to have physical tools in his favor. Ugas, more of a counterpuncher, at least he has been in a lot of his fights. This is one of those fights where I can see Spence, whether it's because of the eye or not, not going for the knockout in it, but kind of cruising to like one of those 8-4, 9-3 type of decisions. I think he's fully capable of with his skill set. So I like Spence in that way in this fight.
Yeah, I could see it, but you know, because he hasn't knocked someone out in a very long time.
It's been a while,
So he did say yesterday that he didn't predict that he was going to knock out your Dennis Ugas at the open workout yesterday, but he said he was going to press for the knockout. You know what I mean? Maybe more so than he had, than he did against Danny Garcia or maybe in some other fights. But just one thing as it relates to Ugas, Chris, you know, win, lose, or draw on Saturday night. This is an amazing, it's really an incredible story, because when I worked for the paper, you know, the Record and the Herald News, the two papers that I worked for in New Jersey for a very long time, your Dennis Ugas used to train in Patterson, New Jersey, Hackensack, New Jersey. He was there for quite some time. He lived in North Bergen. And I know people who know, you know, I covered his fights and all that, and I know him, you know, well enough, but these people really know him intimately when he came here from Miami. And where he was, you know, there was a point in like 2012, 2013, he was sharing an apartment with three other fighters, and he had a manager in Miami who kind of stopped sending him, for whatever reason, stopped sending him money. And he was flat broke, and he was sharing a tiny apartment with three other fighters. He was training at a gym in Patterson. He was living in North Bergen. Really didn't have much prospects of anything going on, and he loses back-to-back fights on points, and he doesn't fight for 2 years. And now he's in a major pay-per-view event. Now, he's an underdog. He's plus 400 or so, and Errol Spence is minus 600. He's clearly an underdog. The fact that he beat Manny Pacquiao and he's now in this position coming from that tiny apartment in North Bergen, New Jersey, and all of the could you even fathom some of the stuff that this man went through to get here from Cuba, defected? I mean, oh, my God, right? So the fact that he's here on Saturday night and he's fighting at Cowboy Stadium against Errol Spence in an enormous pay-per-view event, it's a miracle.
You just wanted to bring up North Bergen, New Jersey.
No, but I mean, Chris, all kidding aside, hey, listen, I know I wear jersey on my, you know, I wear it as a badge of honor, but all joking aside, I mean, to be where he was losing those back-to-back fights as a light, remember, he was a lightweight then too, right? I mean, no one could have predicted this. I mean, this is crazy where he is now. And he's gotten better. He's tapped into his potential and he's gotten better. And Ismael Salas has really brought a lot out of him and everything. But it's an incredible story.
No, it really is. Win or lose, he's accomplished something. Made some money against Pacquiao, made even more money, I'm sure, to fight Errol Spence. And win or lose, you'll probably see him back in another big fight at some point, either this year or early next year. So, you know, good for him. And I think it's going to be a competitive fight. I just think Spence's tools are, he's got a little bit more in the bag than Ugas does. And if he's at his best, I think he's going to be able to control this one. Before I let you go, Andy Ruiz to Triller? What did we think of that? He's fighting Tyrone Spong.
I know that no one else wants to pay him what he thinks he's worth. So, you know, let Triller – listen, maybe they'll pay him, maybe they won't. That's the way it happens at Triller. I don't know exactly. But, look, I get if you got Al Haymon – well, in any kind of moment, but if you got Al Haymon in a quiet moment, he'd be like – thank God I don't have to figure out how to pay him, because you can't keep putting Andy Ruiz in pay-per-view fights that are going to fail. I mean, the obvious, you know, so and look, if you're Andy Ruiz, you did beat Anthony Joshua a few years ago. So you feel like you deserve to be paid X. The market might not necessarily dictate that. And if you're Triller, we take our shots at Triller and they deserve a lot of it, whether they like it or not, for the most part. But if you're them, that's a get for them, right? If you get Andy Ruiz to fight on your platform, he's a former heavyweight champion of the world. I guess, I mean, you know, I don't know how well it's going to do on their platform, but it's better than some of the fights that they've made.
I was fascinated that it's going to be on a pay-per-view. Like, I'm not sure what kind of numbers should be expected for Andy Ruiz against Tyrone Spong. Like, I don't.
Well, listen, we just saw Charles Martin and Luis Ortiz on pay-per-view. So I don't know. I guess anything's possible. Right?
I guess you could sell that, like, you know, two-time title challenger versus former five-minute heavyweight champion.
And it was an entertaining. I'm not. The fight was good.
You know, but even the build-up you could
in the ring,
sell
it was entertaining.
Like, I didn't know how Tyrone Spong was before. I knew he was the guy that was supposed to fight Usyk, and then he tested positive for like something. I did that. I don't know. I assumed Ruiz and Luis Ortiz were headed for something, but that must have just been too pricey for anybody. And like, Andy Ruiz, Luis Ortiz on pay-per-view is not going to sell either. So I don't know what they're,
I don't know what you do with a guy with like Ruiz. Maybe you just let him go fight on other platforms, which appears to be what's happening in this case. So,
yeah. And look, like you said, maybe PBC kind of breathes a sigh of relief. Like, you know, for one fight, Andy's off their books, and if he wins, get some visibility, maybe you can bring him back for that Ortiz fight later on this year or something like that.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, they've put worse fights on pay-per-view this year. So I don't know what they're going to look. And in fairness to them, some of these fights that they don't have both platforms right now where right. You could put fights on Fox and you could put fights on Showtime. They don't have it. Like Fox is not televising, or they just don't seem to be interested in televising boxing right now. They're supposedly going to do a few shows here as we move along in the spring and summer, but I don't know. I don't have any concrete proof of that. So yeah, I mean, they might just have to take some fights to pay-per-view and take the public relation hits on the chin, so to speak. And that's part of the business. They know that.
Oh, and there's your Andy Ruiz update for the day off the trailer.
Welcome.
Tyrone Spong. Keith, good stuff, man. Enjoy it down in Arlington. I'm sure you're going to get a good one on Saturday night. Thanks as always for joining me, man.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris. Have a good one, man.
When we come back, my conversation with Errol Spence.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name. That's my game.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Fight fans, take your best shot with a risk-free bet of up to $1,000 from FanDuel Sportsbook. Even if your fighter gets knocked out or tapped out, new customers get up to $1,000 back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING to bet on all the biggest boxing matches and UFC fights. Choose from the money line to the method of victory and so much more. FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. The app is so easy to use, and when you win, you'll get paid quickly. And FanDuel Sportsbook has just launched in Ontario, Canada. To place your first bet risk-free, just sign up with the promo code BOXING. Okay, Errol Spence is here, unified 147-pound champion. On Saturday, he will attempt to add one more piece of the welterweight crown to his portfolio when he takes on Jordanes Ugas down at Cowboy Stadium in Arlington, Texas. That's a fight that you can watch exclusively in the U.S. on Showtime pay-per-view. And Errol joins me now on the show. So, Errol, when you're kind of going through another significant injury, is there any part of you that's like, man, why me? Like, why me? Why again? Why now? Just kind of all the bullshit that goes with it.
Nah, definitely not. like I told everybody, you know, I think in, you know, perspective, if I have eye injury or accident or anything like that, and I'm saying why me, you know, I can also say, you know, why me that, you know, I'm winning all these world titles and, you know, and things like that, and all these blessings coming towards me. So, you know, I feel like in life, you know, you get, you know, good and bad things happen to you. You know, it's how you handle them. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I handle them great. You know, I got a lot of, you know, great people behind me who just give me confirmation that I, you know, I'm doing the right things. And, you know, it's all about learning and, you know, getting better.
How concerned were you when you heard the diagnosis that it could be career ending?
I was a little concerned, but you know, I wasn't really too much worried about it because, you know, they said it was detached. So, you know, they said, you know, that injury is career ending, but, you know, mine wasn't fully just gone off the eye yet, you know. It was just detached. It was slightly detached, not all the way. So, you know, they basically just put it back up the wall.
What did you think of the skeptics of your injury? People like Bernard Hopkins, who suggest it was more about money than it was an actual injury.
You know, I don't know, man. I just... Just, I don't know why he would even, you know, say that type of stuff, say that, because, I mean, I never had any outside problems where, you know, I argued about, you know, a contract or money or anything like that. You know, that's something, you know, if it was money or anything like that, you know, I would talk to my manager about not just drop out of fight, you know, so... That's crazy. How is it about money? You know, fighting probably the biggest guy, you know, besides Floyd Mayweather, you know. So, you know, it definitely wasn't about any money.
Well, when you were diagnosed with the eye injury, you knew going in, like, what that Pacquiao fight could do for you. You even talked about it after the fact, kind of a king-making type of performance against Pacquiao. Did you wonder at the time if you could fight through that injury and get and deal with it after?
Nah, I didn't want to. I knew I could fight, you know, and get through. But, you know, the doctor wasn't going for it at all. So, but, you know, I knew that, you know, I could do it, even though, you know, that would have been a dumb decision on my part. But in the heat of the moment, you know, I was ready for it.
As you got back into training for this Ugas fight, how would you compare it to getting back into training for your previous fight after the car accident?
Night and day, because, I mean, that was just eye injury. And, you know, it's basically, you know, once it healed up and they put, basically I got two straps, rubber bands on my eye where, you know, it's basically indestructible. Unless I get shot in my eye or something. It's indestructible, so, you know, nothing bad happened. But, you know, the car accident, that was, like, damaging physically to my body and, you know, mentally too. So, you know, that was a lot harder to get back from. So it was like night and day, you know. After my eye injury, it was like me taking, you know, probably like 2 months off and then, you know, back in the gym training and focus, you know. Which I probably needed anyway, so.
How do you feel, you know, compared to the camp you went through for Danny Garcia, like getting that camp out of the way, your first camp post-accident, how has this camp felt compared to that?
Night and day, too, because, you know, I think I'm losing weight the right way. You know, I got a, you know, dietitian, you know, so, you know, I feel like everything's on point. I'm not, you know, cooking my food or, you know, not drinking water and stuff like that, not killing myself, you know, weeks and months before the fight, you know, just to make weight. So, you know, I feel like it's night and day from the Danny Garcia fight.
Was it hard to watch Ugas beat Pacquiao in a fight that you so badly wanted?
Nah, it wasn't hard. I mean, I watched it, you know. So, you know, it wasn't hard. You know, I felt like, you know, my whole thing is there, stuff happened for a reason. And or if it don't happen, you know, stuff happened. You know, it's life. You know, it's how you deal with it. So, you know, I knew that, you know, after he beat Pacquiao, I was gonna either fight the winner of it. And, you know, my whole thing is, you know, fighting for the belt and getting that belt, things like that. So, you know, of course, you know, he took, you know, the, I would have had way more, you know, notoriety and been, you know, way huge star, you know, fighting Pacquiao, because Pacquiao was like, you know, icon in the sport. But, you know, it come with the territory, man. It comes with the territory.
You know, the it feels like deja vu, and that the last time we spoke, it was a question about why not take a tune-up fight? Why not take a shake off the rust fight? If anyone in boxing has been entitled to those types of fights over the last few years, it's been you because of what you've gone through. But here you are again, whatever number fight this is in a row of a pretty big fight. Last time it was against the high-profile guy in Danny Garcia, this time in a title unification fight. Why have you been so determined coming off significant issues to immediately take big fights?
Because I feel like I wasted enough time, you know, with the accidents and injuries and things like that. So it's basically to get back, you know, jump back right back on the ball, because I feel like, you know, that's like 2-3 months for training camp, you know. And then, you know, after the fight, then probably 3-4 months doing nothing, and 2-3 months for another training camp, then another fight. Like, that's going to take too much time. I'd rather jump right back on the ball and then, you know, fight. And I think I said something on Twitter like a while ago after my car accident. I was like, I don't take tune-up fight. I make y'all favorite fighters my tune-ups or something like that. So, you know, that's basically, you know, what I'm on. And I've been training too and focused. So I feel like, you know, I don't need to tune up, because, you know, I'm just, you know, mentally ready and physically ready.
Yeah, you've got that attitude, which is, I think, fantastic for boxing in general. You see, you know, across the pond, George Kambosos has that attitude coming off a Teofimo Lopez win, going right into a Devin Haney fight. Does it surprise you that, you know, more boxers don't have the attitude that why waste time with tune-up fights?
That don't surprise me, because, I mean, just that's what, you know, some fighters go through. I mean, just, you know, that's what they're accustomed to. That's the thing, you know, have a long layoff off an injury or anything like that, you know, you get a tune-up, you know. But for me, I feel like, you know, with my pedigree, I got better sparring partners than tune-ups, you know. I use tune-ups for sparring and things like that, you know. So, I grade my performance and stuff like that out sparring and, you know, getting the best sparring and sparring them. And then, you know, if I'm sharp in that aspect, then, you know, I don't need a tune-up fight.
Were there any limitations on, like, sparring partners for this fight? Like, is coming off of the injury you had, was there any reason to be careful in those situations?
I mean, you know, I'm more careful, you know, on the defense and, like, you know, making sure, you know, I pick off shots, you know, get here with careless shots. But, it's full-blown, you know, sparring.
If you win this fight, you'll have 3 belts at 147. It's great to hear you making weight in a good way. You're a big guy, and you've talked before about moving up to 154 at some point. If it's not Terrence Crawford after this, can you see this being your last fight at 147?
You know, I'm just going to keep an open mind, you know, and just, you know, and, you know, hope, you know, I get what I want, you know, and he get what he want. And, you know, it happens, but, you know, I'm not getting my off Ugas, which is, you know, next week. So I'm going to focus on him. And then once, you know, I get him, then, you know, I worry about other people. But, you know, it's definitely 100% focused on, you know, the tasks in front of me, and that's Ugas.
Do you have any insight into what Terrence Crawford's going to do next?
I don't have any insight, you know. I don't too much care.
You know, the stuff with Crawford kicked off in a different way when you and I spoke in Texas during the DAZN broadcast, where you said something along the lines of Crawford wants to fight me at 70-30 or 60-40 my way. Do you still feel that way at this point?
Nah, man. We were just shooting shit at each other, you know. You know, I was just antagonizing them. But you know,
it seemed to work, Errol.
Yeah, it definitely worked. Because he was like, man, fuck him, I ain't fighting him. I ain't got no interest in fighting him. So.
But do you see that as, I mean, is it 50-50 in your mind? Is that a fair, you know, outcome?
I don't know. I mean, that ain't, you know, that's for the people who, that's for the guys, you know, in the suits who, you know, type, who tally everything up and see the numbers and, you know, and then, you know, and say all that, what he deserved and what this person deserves. So I let them handle all that and, hopefully, you know, we can make the fight happen, but, you know, that's not for me to say at all. And, you know.
Before I let you go, Ugas is a challenge. You know, he's skilled. He's coming off the win over Pacquiao. When you, I don't know how much tape as a fighter you watch of your opponents or if you choose to, but when you look at him and you watch him fight, what makes him dangerous in the ring?
I think everything. I mean, you know, he's a tricky fighter. You know, he's a guy that, you know, that can fight. You know, I think, you know, he can't get nasty where, you know, he's throwing, you know, hard shots and, you know, trying to take you out. So, you know, and he's a big guy too. So, you know, he's going to make for a great fight.
Yeah, it should be a great fight. Errol, good luck against Ugas. And hopefully next time we talk before a fight, it's not, you know, 5 minutes on injuries before we talk boxing.
definitely. Appreciate it,
Errol. Take care, man.
No problem.
And when we come back, my picks brought to you by FanDuel. All right, time now for this week's picks brought to you by our friends over at FanDuel. And I am zeroing in this week on the big one, the welterweight unification fight between Errol Spence Jr. and Jordanus Ugas. Now, I would love to tell you to bet on Ugas. He is a very talented fighter. He has got good odds, plus 410, according to FanDuel. And he's going up against a guy that's coming off a long layoff and another serious injury, this time the eye with Errol Spence. But Errol Spence has overcome a lot in his career. He overcame a nasty car crash to beat Danny Garcia back in 2020. And everything I'm hearing out of Spence's camp is that it has been excellent, that he's ready for this fight. And Errol Spence, at his best, is just better than Jordanus Ugas. So I am taking Errol Spence minus 650 to win. I think it's a safe bet because I think Spence is the better fighter. I'm taking Spence, though, to win by decision. A little bit better odds on this one. He's minus 140 to win by decision. Spence, he hasn't picked up a knockout in several years. He has become, to me, a little bit more of a careful fighter over the last few years as his level of competition has significantly improved. I think he outboxes Jordanus Ugas, and I think he wins by decision. Those are my picks, brought to you by FanDuel.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18, my first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
All right, time now for this week's picks brought to you by our friends over at FanDuel. And I am zeroing in this week on the big one. The welterweight unification fight between Errol Spence Jr. and Jordanus Ugas. Now, I would love to tell you to bet on Ugas. He is a very talented fighter. He has got good odds, plus 410, according to FanDuel. And he's going up against a guy that's coming off a long layoff and another serious injury, this time the eye with Errol Spence. But Errol Spence has overcome a lot in his career. He overcame a nasty car crash to beat Danny Garcia back in 2020. And everything I'm hearing out of Spence's camp is that it has been excellent, that he's ready for this fight. And Errol Spence, at his best, is just better than Jordanus Ugas. So I am taking Errol Spence minus 650 to win. I think it's a safe bet because I think Spence is the better fighter. I'm taking Spence, though, to win by decision. A little bit better odds on this one. He's minus 140 to win by decision. Spence, he hasn't picked up a knockout in several years. He has become, to me, a little bit more of a careful fighter over the last few years as his level of competition has significantly improved. I think he outboxes Jordanus Ugas, and I think he wins by decision. Those are my picks, brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idek and Errol Spence for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.